You're listening to Clinical Conversations, a Journal Watch podcast for the week of May 15th. I'm Joey Leo. Call us at 1-617-440-4374 with your reactions, allergic or otherwise. This week, we've got an interview with Martha Gulati, whose paper on the dangers faced by symptomatic women with normal coronary angiography was just published in the Archives of Internal Medicine. A look at the clinical news first. Let's see. There are new interventional guidelines for low back pain just issued in, of all places, spine. They frown upon some of the more exotic procedures, like provocative discography. No, that's not the ironic listing of an artist's recordings, but the injection of material into the disc nucleus in an attempt to reproduce the patient's pain and thus locate the source. Here's another one they frown on, prolotherapy. Again, injecting things, this time irritants, into the disc to stimulate an inflammatory response. Speaking of pain, the Geriatrics Society has revised its pain management guidelines. They say that elders should only rarely get non-selective NSAIDs and COX-2 selective inhibitors for moderate to severe pain. The elders should be considered as candidates for carefully monitored opioid therapy, however. And then there's a new clinical tool for predicting which older adults will suffer dementia. The tool seems to work pretty well. Over half of those with high-risk scores had dementia over the next 6 years, but only 4% of those with low scores. What are the risks? Well, poor cognitive test scores for one, pretty obvious, but there are also points taken off for slow physical performance, as in buttoning your shirt slowly, and for not, and I repeat, not drinking alcohol. It's in neurology. Just when you thought swine flu was gone, more cases have popped in New York City. The CDC, in unrelated advice on the flu, says that pregnant women who have been in contact with someone even suspected of having flu exposure should receive antivirals, whose side effects are outweighed by the protection they afford. That's really quite enough news for 1 week, don't you think? Now on to the interview. The Archives of Internal Medicine this week published a study on cardiovascular events in women who have angina but no lesions, or only lesions considered minor and non-obstructive on angiography. The Women's Ischemia Syndrome Evaluation Study followed over 500 such women for an average of 5 years. Their outcomes were compared with a sample of women from the St. James Women Take Heart Project who had no symptoms and no history of heart disease. When all was said and done, the women with angina had higher rates of cardiovascular events, even if their angiograms were completely clear of obstruction. We've asked the study's first author, Dr. Martha Gulati, to discuss the implications of all this with us. Dr. Gulati is a cardiologist at Northwestern University and is the associate medical director of the Center for Women's Cardiovascular Health at the Bloom Cardiovascular Institute. Welcome, Dr. Gulati.
Thank you.
So, there's been a history of surprises among symptomatic women with normal angiograms?
Well, I think the issue has been that these often clinically we'll see these women, they have normal angiograms, but they truly have symptoms and often signs of ischemia. For years, you know, we've always thought, well, if your angiogram is normal, there's nothing to worry about, and that most often women are being told, well, it's not coming from your heart, and just sort of stepping away from cardiac issues altogether.
Yeah.
So this study actually is the first that we know of that has shown, compared to a normal cohort that doesn't have any symptoms, that these women with symptoms actually are at increased cardiac risk.
You found that symptomatic women, even with clear arteries, had a threefold higher event rate than community-dwelling normal women, right?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, and was that a surprise, or did you suspect that you might get that result?
I think those of us who work in this field weren't surprised, because if you take care of these women, you do see them come back, you do see them have cardiac events despite normal coronary arteries. But I think to be able to demonstrate it in this way at least gives us more power than just saying clinical hearsay.
And they seemed to sort themselves out. The women who were symptomatic with risk factors and obstructions had a higher rate of events, followed by the women with symptoms but no obstruction, followed by otherwise normal women with these risk factors. So it seems that there is a kind of a stratum of risk here.
Yeah, definitely. It seems that the fact that women have symptoms, if we assume that non-cardiac causes were ruled out, because the symptomatic women from the WISE population were all referred for angiography because someone was suspicious that there was coronary disease. Mm-hmm. That's how they got into this study. So knowing that group, I mean, I think a lot, you know, other non-cardiac causes were ruled out. So they had symptoms, they had abnormal stress tests, and then they were sent for angiography. Even though they had the group that was at the highest risk were the symptomatic women with non-obstructive coronary disease, but not clean coronaries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so what we said is clean coronaries was less than 0%, 0% stenosis. The more at-risk group was anyone with 1 to 49% stenosis on the angiogram.
Mm-hmm.
And those were the women at the highest risk when they had symptoms. But again, remembering the cohort that is being referred, these were women who people had evaluated and thought that they would find blockages in. And I think that's who we tend, you know, a lot of people will have patients in their clinics where they're suspicious that their symptoms are angina. They have had an abnormal stress test, so why not refer them for an angiography? But the surprise is that often in women, more often than not, we're seeing women with the same things, same signs and symptoms, having normal angiograms. And I guess the take-home message is really don't stop there.
I had written on the, as I was first reading the paper, I'd written on it, symptoms mean something.
Exactly.
And so I guess that was my take-home message. Although, as you said, that there are other explanations for these symptoms. And what are some of those?
So, of course, you know, you hope that when you have someone with chest pain that the most life-threatening issues would be cardiac. But obviously, there's things that we know in our own clinical judgment that these symptoms may not be coming from the heart, ruling out things like musculoskeletal pain, reflux, other, you know, trauma to the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes even, I hate to always say this for women, but anxiety or panic attacks, if that is an issue or if that is something that could be the cause of it, you want to make sure it's that first. But
yeah.
I think based on, you know, your clinical judgment, someone, you may refer them for a stress test because they have risk factors, because you know that, well, this is someone who definitely could have heart disease. And that's usually how they get to the stress lab as the first step. You know, sometimes there will be abnormal EKG findings that suggest, well, this could be the heart. So if they get to the stress lab, I mean, if the stress test is completely normal, I think in all safety, you've done your job, it's probably not coming from the heart. It's not angina. You weren't able to provoke ischemia
mm-hmm.
in a stress lab setting, and you're done there. But on the other hand, if the stress test is abnormal and you send them for an angiogram and you find normal or non-obstructive coronaries, don't stop there treating them. Don't stop thinking that they're not at risk because they had symptoms, they had signs of ischemia, and the normal coronary still doesn't buy them reassurance,
mm-hmm.
and it shouldn't buy the physician reassurance either.
Do some women still get the reassurance treatment when they come up with these apparently benign findings, or has the medical world now completely bought into the dangers?
I think that this is new information, and I do think that still to date, in many settings, women with normal angiograms are just given reassurance because no one knows what to do with them. I think that a lot of physicians, though, would say that they know that these patients come back again and again and have symptoms. And the struggle is most physicians don't know what to do with them. They've done everything. And that's what I think our study at least shed some light on, one, that it's not benign. And secondly, although this wasn't part of our study, but some of the WISE study did already test to hypothesize why these people are still at increased risk, we've done studies within the WISE looking at endothelial dysfunction, and that's why we've hypothesized that many of these women who go on to have events have endothelial dysfunction. And we're really pushing, as you could see in our paper, that perhaps we need to go a little bit further. If an angiogram is normal, tests for endothelial dysfunction need to be done. But the fact is that most hospitals, clinical settings, aren't yet equipped to do endothelial dysfunction, and that's what we need to get, you know, get moving towards and getting cath labs to do and maybe figuring out what's the best diagnostic testing for that.
And are there any that are available in specialty centers?
Sure, certainly in many specialty centers, we are now doing tests for endothelial dysfunction. So, I mean, I can only speak for Northwestern University, but I also know my colleagues at Cedars-Sinai and my colleagues at University of Florida, the people who are co-authors on this paper. We are all centers that do extra testing to test for endothelial dysfunction right in our cath lab where we use stimulation with acetylcholine to see is there a normal response. A normal response to acetylcholine would be where we put acetylcholine right into the coronary artery. Normal coronary artery should vasodilate. If it vasoconstricts, that's an abnormal response, and we believe is a very specific sign of endothelial dysfunction. So that's one way to do it. We're also doing some testing using magnetic resonance imaging, where we do basically a stress test under the MRI machine using adenosine and looking for subendocardial ischemia that we believe could be a sign also of endothelial dysfunction. So there's many different options, and we're still trying to work out what is the best test for that. But if any of those come back abnormal, at least you might consider treating those women more aggressively and thinking of them as the starter of coronary artery disease.
And what are the typical treatments?
At this time, you know, again, we need some randomized trials. So that I would qualify this by saying nobody's taken these people with endothelial dysfunction and randomized them to what's the best treatment. They've done it in small ways. They've tested individual drugs and said this works and that works, but not sort of a combination of what should we be giving to all such women or men, for that matter, who fit into this setting. But at this point, as best as we can estimate with the knowledge that we have this far, and I again qualify this because I think this is an emerging area of research,
yes,
but I think that the medications that have been shown to improve endothelial dysfunction is what we are tending to give to the women who we see with these issues. We're giving them, and they tend to be the standard medications that we're giving for people with coronary artery disease. Mm-hmm. So first and foremost, trying to get cardiac risk factors controlled in whatever way you want, but I mean, they need to be controlled because as we show, the more risk factors you had, the higher risk you were at.
Right.
And in addition, though, the medications that we are using are based on, again, the studies that have been used individually, but aspirin beta blockers, statin, ACE inhibitors. Sometimes we do use tricyclic antidepressants and also exercise training. All of these things have been shown to improve endothelial function. So there is sort of a logic of why these drugs should work, like they should stabilize the endothelium.
Now, have the studies been done yet that show that this treatment makes a difference clinically or in mortality rates?
So these are ongoing trials right now. There is a couple of trials going on where women are getting randomized to these medications versus whatever standard of care is, but we don't have the data right now as how it will translate to cardiac outcomes or mortality, and that's what we need at this point. There is studies looking at individual drugs, like all the ones that I listed, showing that it improved cardiac symptoms and also improved endothelial function. But that was on an individual basis. What cocktail we should hand to women, that's what we're working on right now.
Is that on your research agenda?
It is. It's actually an ongoing study. Actually, there's many ongoing. We have one particularly going on at Northwestern known as the Stiletto study, and we are actually trying to answer this, you know, randomizing people to medical treatment versus usual care, trying to figure out who does better. Can we, one, can we improve symptoms? Because that's what really is bothering these women. But also, can we change outcomes?
Well, that sounds interesting, Dr. Gulati, and we'll look forward to seeing your research about that when it comes out.
All right, great.
And thanks for taking the time with us today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
You know, we're all ears here at 1-617-440-4374, so give us a ring. Clinical Conversations executive producer is Adore Yano. I'm Joe Elia. Join us next week. Enough said.